Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. Been gone for a few, almost 2 weeks now, I think, but we are back. We are here to give you the content that you have been craving. As always, we are brought to you by the Vigit Sports Betting app. Bet fake coins, win real prizes. Download Vigit today. We're going to get to some hot stuff with Vigit later in the show here, but let's start with... A lot happened in this time that we've been gone, we've been out for. Some big stuff, some playoff stuff. We're going to start outside of the realm of the playoffs. Start with the one real bit of news for the NFL. So a couple days ago on Shannon Sharpe's show, he called Julio Jones and decided to have a conversation with this man, an impromptu conversation in which Julio essentially stated that he did not want to come back to the Falcons. Requesting a trade, all that fun stuff, all on national television. And now there seems to be a race to see if any team can land Julio. So you want to give us a rundown on this, what's been happening ever since that lovely phone call on national TV?
Yeah, it has been a while. Robbie and I have been a little bit away. A lot of stuff has gone on, which Robbie and I will talk about very shortly in a episode we'll probably title as simply as Life. But before we begin, because I am utterly dead, I am going to crack this one open. Hope you hear that on my mic.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I need a cig, too. Like, it feels like we've been gone that long where I need to smoke a cig and go, I remember the glory days.
The good old days. The
good old days.
We got to recapture the magic.
Yeah. Unless you've been living under a rock, on Undisputed, on FS1, Shannon Sharpe called Julio Jones. And Julio... candidly, and I put candidly in quotes, told him he does not want to return to the Falcons. Now, any person with a brain would probably assume that this was staged or at least set up in some capacity. Julio Jones seems like he has a close enough relationship to Shannon Sharpe that he would tell him this stuff. So therefore, he'd probably know when Shannon Sharpe's live on air. I presume this is him trying to draw up interest so he can get off the Falcons. It's no secret that the Falcons have been struggling, been trying to get a little bit younger, and Julio wants to kind of win now. He's still one of the best receivers in the game, wants to do a lot. And kind of like you said, it is a literal arms race to see who can get him. There have been a bunch of different teams that have kind of cycled out. First was the Patriots. Patriots very big into talking about it. And then the Titans were kind of thrown in there. AJ Brown was trying to kind of coerce Julio Jones, send him some Instagram DMs, you know, the good old stuff. And that sort of shifted away. Now we have the Ravens are looking at him, but knowing the Ravens, it sounds like a great idea on paper, but they'll never pull the trigger because that's kind of the Ravens for you. And then you have today, it was the Seahawks, which sounds incredibly scary, especially if Russell Wilson's staying there. A few other teams throw in the mix. My Philadelphia Eagles will never pull the trigger on that, as we all know. Another interesting team is the Chargers, though. And I kind of like the Chargers. Think about that. Mike Williams, actually. Keenan Allen, Julio Jones. Throw in a few other additional players like Austin Eckler.
Antonio Gates back.
Yes, yes. Honestly, if they had Hunter Henry as well, he's on the Patriots now, that'd be an incredibly scary offense with still no defense, but we'll get there.
Yeah, though, I mean, of some of those teams, though, I mean, so the Seahawks were the big one that came out today. That's terrifying. DK and Julio, I don't even want to think about that as an opposing defense. And the Steelers, extra game this year is against the Seahawks. So that'd be horrifying.
That's revenge for Super Bowl 40, though. I'm just letting you know.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. You know, the Eagles would be a great fit because any good receiver in Philly would be a great fit.
If any good player comes to Philly, it's a great fit. It's a good player.
I actually really like Tennessee as an option. It doesn't sound like it's going to happen.
No.
But that was actually a really good option in my mind. The Patriots, I obviously don't want to see anybody go to the Patriots. Obviously, it would help. But I think they're a little young to need a Julio type player. Right now, I think there needs to be a competing team. You mentioned Tampa Bay right before we got on. That'd be horrifying.
That was a toxic comment, though. Like, I always make these comments. Like, what if one of the best receivers in football went to the best team in football and had Tom Brady? Wouldn't that be fun? And Robbie just, like, was ready to vomit on sight.
I was ready to choose violence.
Regardless, though, we'll keep you updated on that. That is probably going to be the biggest development of the offseason, unless Tom Brady for some reason retires, which won't happen. But if he does, that will usurp it 100%. Blake, I think the other piece of news, Robbie, is some personal news. I have picked my secondary football team that I like.
Yeah?
Yep. I am going to be a diehard secondary Buffalo Bills fan.
Oh, we love it. Bills Mafia, it got you, didn't it?
It, you know, between going up to the air for Memorial Day weekend, seeing everyone. By the way, everyone in Buffalo is unbelievably polite and nice. Like, you know how nice I am as a person. I feel like they're going to consider me an asshole. Like, the little bit of edge I have, and I don't have much of it. But they're so genuine, and it's weird coming from, like, Pennsylvania and, like, kind of living New York, near, like, New York City most of my life, or Philly for that matter. But I'm looking forward to the Buffalo Bills. I saw the stadium this past weekend, was up in Buffalo for the Memorial Day weekends. Good stuff. So watch out, Robbie. I'm going to have a good team I can root for. It's over, bud.
Wow. You know, I knew it wasn't going to be the Steelers, but my heart hoped it was the Steelers because, you know, my second favorite team is the Eagles because I like my hometown. I do like my hometown teams, just not usually as my first primary team because they're Philly and they're only so good.
I prefer my teams to have a longstanding history of losing and being cursed. That way when they win, it makes it all the better.
I can respect that.
It's kind of true, though.
Pittsburgh Steelers, I can't relate to it.
I don't disagree. So that's our last bit of news for the NFL. Been a pretty quiet offseason. I guess other than that, Tim Tebow looks like he's on steroids. But mm-hmm. I guess one other thing. Tim Tebow, very holy as a person, like very Catholic. And this is not like me talking into religion whatsoever. But just from playing sports, those athletes who, like, you know, getting interviewed post game, like, Tim, you know, you had this incredible play, you know, that had the 85-yard touchdown pass to Demaryius Thomas. How'd you do it? And just stares dead in the camera, goes, first of all, glory to God. They're just like deadpan. Like, they have something wired a bit different. And to me, that's like one of the scariest things to go up in front of a competitor when just the will of God is like acting into them and they're just like ready to.
Dude, faith, like, can be a terrifying thing.
It's incredible. And Tim Tebow to me is that guy who's going to score like a game-winning touchdown pass this year from Trevor Lawrence. And I can't believe I'm even saying those words. And they're like, Tim, how'd you do it? This is your comeback season. He's like, first of all, glory to God, just staring deadpan in the camera. And you're just like that look, like it's nice and sweet, but you're also a little bit terrified because he's just like not blinking.
Nope. That's going to be a fun development, isn't it?
The Jaguars are going to be a fun team to watch. And I guess Tim Tebow signed. Like I forget the contract details, but I think it's under $1 million, but he signed a contract.
It's one of those where, like, he's on the roster, and if he does, in fact, play his way off of the roster, like, it's not like it kills the team to cut his contract.
Yeah. But there people are 100% buying his jerseys already.
Oh, no. I mean, that's like a move as a franchise to, like, try and get people behind you. You should just keep him. People would fall in love with your team if Tim Tebow was your starting or backup tight end.
To any Jaguars fans, and I know there's not a whole lot of you out there, if you buy a Tim Tebow jersey and they cut him, I want you to riot. Like, boycott all Jacksonville games. That's scummy, and you know it, Robbie. They can't bring in a star like Timothy Tebow and just cut him. That would be so disappointing.
I don't even have words.
You're just stunned that I'm just on this tangent.
Tim Tebow. We're just going to let Tim Tebow decide what happens for his future, because I don't even want to touch these predictions, especially because the last team he was on was the Eagles for like 5 days.
Yeah, and I drafted him in fantasy as a joke, and that ended poorly for me, but we'll move past that. This goes to show you how minimal the offseason has been. It's been pretty tame, which is kind of nice. I guess the other thing announced, I think 30 of the 32 teams are at full capacity for the start of the season, mm-hmm. which makes sense. You know, COVID is dying out. People are getting vaccinated. All good things. You know, it's been over a year. It's been 14 months. Let that sink in.
Let's move on as we're all getting forward. So let's hop into baseball here as the season is well underway at this point. Well, the Tampa Bay Rays have gotten absolutely red hot, 9-1 in their last 10 games. They now sit atop the American League, in part from some great pitching. That division, though, however, sees three of the best teams in the AL between the Rays, the Red Sox, and the Yankees, who have now started to figure things out despite battling some injuries. But the Rays were a team we had talked about in the beginning of the year. They got off to a slow start. What has it been that kind of clicked into gear for them to go on that tear right there? Mm-hmm.
Well, part of it's playing the Phillies because the Phillies have just been decimated these past few games. And you know I'm not wrong. I get notifications on my phone for score updates. It's like, you know, the lineups. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, Phillies are pretty healthy. This is good. And then, like, right immediately as the game starts, such and such is a two-run home run, Rays up 2-0. And I'm like, well, all right, cool. This was a fun day. Now kind of ruined. The Rays, though, obviously they were the AL champions last year. They went to the World Series, played in utterly stacked Dodgers team. They kept a lot of their core intact with the exception of Blake Snell. They kind of disassociated from him after all that. To me, though, the Rays just started like kind of like the Yankees in the sense that they started slow and they're a team built of consistency and like hitting and getting people on base and scoring. They're not power hitters necessarily. They're very good and they can be very consistent. And once the consistency starts to flow like it is now, they're going on a run, and it comes at the perfect time playing the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah.
It's fine, Robbie. It's fine.
It's totally fine. We definitely didn't lose 6-2 today to the Rays.
It's fine.
It's totally fine. Rich Hill the other day, thankfully not against the Phillies. He went 8 innings, 13 strikeouts. So that's always going to go a long way for a team. Only give up 2 runs, I believe. Yeah, the Rays just really clicking right now. They, like I said, sitting atop the AL in first place. We'll hop to the other side of the league as it's a little more competitive towards the top. I wouldn't say more competitive because they're all, you know, a game apart here on both sides, but when there's a little more confusion, I'd say, in the NL. The Dodgers, though, team that, you know, they've been up and down with the injuries. They're starting to get healthy again. Bellinger's back. He's in the lineup. Lux came back. They're now third in the NL. But first is the Padres. They are leading the NL right now. This stat I saw about Fernando Tatis, I wanted to bring on here. So he has only played 68% of the Padres games, and he is currently tied for the NL lead in home runs. He is maybe the best player in the league sub healthy Mike Trout.
I would 100% agree with that. I was about to just throw Mike Trout's name in there because at one point he was batting 400, which is asinine, and just how incredible that is. Yeah, I mean, Tatis, it's weird because last year he had his breakout season, like the bat flips, everything, killed it, and the Padres looked like a genuinely good franchise rather than the laughing stock they've been for, honestly, probably our entire lives.
Yeah.
Other than Jake Peavy. Jake Peavy's the only exception to that rule, but the only Padre I like can recall. And Trevor Hoffman, who was like the saves leader for a bunch of years. But to me, it's super – honestly, maybe it's because I'm like a little bit pessimistic about these long-term contracts after Bryce Harper got his, but I expected him to have sort of an off year this year, like to kind of grow into that. Do you get 13 or 10? I think he got 13.
I think he got 13. Yeah, Lindor got 10.
Okay. So what I'm getting at, regardless, it's still a massive contract. So to me, I expected a sort of a down year. He's been injured. We've talked about that. But at the same time, being tied for the home run lead, I think Acuna's tied with him, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. right? That's insane. And he is everything the Padres expected him to be and more. So I don't think this year is the Padres' year. I think they'll eventually maybe get second in the NL West. Maybe they'll win the division. Who knows? But I think they're going to probably run into some trouble in playoffs. They're going to be a nightmare for any team to match up with, but I think they're just a little bit young still.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I do, however, think that we're starting to get the feel with the Padres and the Dodgers of what we all hope in the NBA is the Lakers and the Clippers. Like that kind of feel. Like they're not quite the same city, so it's a little different, but like that heated, like these two in the same division, they kind of want each other. I mean, the dream has to be them two clashing in the NLCS.
I mean, that would be a fantastic series. That is the dream. I would love if it wasn't the Braves playing the Dodgers, but or the Cardinals for that matter. Like the Padres to me are a team anyone can root for because, like we talked about earlier, they're a team of misery. They have not had much success. And when you get these new exciting guys, Machado, you got Tatis, you have Snell, you just have this incredibly young team who is excited to play, sort of changing baseball. Honestly, kind of like the Warriors a few years ago, where it's just this young team who's looking to win and do it in their own sort of style and fashion. That to me is awesome. And I'm looking forward to it. Obviously not at the expense of the Phillies, but
sure.
To me, Trevor Bauer versus Tatis or Machado, like that sort of interstate rivalry mixed with that sort of just personalities clashing. I mean, you can't ask for a better playoff series, and ratings are going to shoot up for the MLB. Like I know they are.
100%. 100%. That is, you know, baseball gods make it happen for us, please and thank you.
But if the baseball gods are anything like the NBA gods, it'll be a disappointment if it's the Clippers. So
we'll get there.
We'll get there. More snide comments will follow. Don't worry.
Of course. Plenty to come. All right. A little bit more here for baseball. Cool stat. Josh Donaldson scored what was the 2 millionth run scored in MLB history. A lot of offense.
What a useless fact.
I love bringing the useless fact.
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. Do you think they had a banner like fall down from the sky? like they're all celebrating for the 2 millionth run. It's like the first inning and they're just like, what the hell's going on?
We should do a side segment sometime of most like our favorite like random stats.
I actually, when we get to the NBA, I have a very useless fun stat that I will bring up, but
I love it. Well, we got plenty of useless knowledge for you guys to come. Don't you worry.
That's basically my entire degree. I'm a graduate now.
Master's a graduate.
Hey, that's true.
All right. An unfortunate note to end on here for baseball, but Atlanta Braves outfielder Marcell Ozuna was arrested on an assault charge yesterday, I believe. He hadn't been playing very well, to be completely honest, and now he is, you know, who knows how long he's going to be out for. Not a pretty situation, but Ozuna, you know, out indefinitely at this point for the Braves.
I did not hear this, and that's news to me, and I honestly, I'm speechless. Let's move on.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Yes, not like good.
Odd way to end baseball. Not a great way, but figure out your shit, Marcell. All right, let's move into the world of the playoffs. We got two sports in playoff mode right now. Let's start with hockey, as our basketball discussion is going to continue into our next segment. So let's start. You know, most of the first round is over. In fact, just one first round game left. You want to give a little bit of a recap to start out.
Say basketball. My apologies.
Hockey.
I was about to say. I thought it was. Well, first and foremost, the big unfortunate one in hockey is the Bruins swept the Capitals. I know. We're all disappointed, except for Bruins fans. But that was the big one. And then, unfortunately, the Bruins won their second round game. But we'll get to that. So that's the big one. The Capitals really didn't stand a chance. They just kind of looked pretty – they really did not look good. The Capitals are not the team that won the Stanley Cup a few years ago. They're completely – they've fallen off a bit. Then you got a few other interesting ones. So the Wild and Golden Knights, and I'm jumping around here. The Golden Knights were up 3-1 against the Wild, took it to a Game 7. It's kind of happened last year, but the Wild did not push it all the way through. The Golden Knights were able to prevail and are now into the second round as well. So we got a few other messes of the games. The Lightning beat the Panthers. That series was 4-2. Lightning looking to repeat as champions. Don't know if it'll happen, but they're kind of scary and definitely still look good. The Islanders beat the Penguins, which was kind of, it was surprising in the sense that Sid the Kid really didn't do as much as we had thought. And the Islanders are one of those franchises that are always snake bitten every year. mean, they lost Tavares probably a year or so ago, and they're still looking good. They're looking to make a run, and they're the ones who lost to the Bruins in the second round, but not too shabby. The Hurricanes, Carolina Hurricanes, beat the Nashville Predators. I honestly can't tell you much about that other than I've been to the Nashville Predators Stadium.
Nice.
Useless facts, yes. And then the Maple Leafs and Canadiens are in a deadlock right now, 3-3. That's interesting to me because both of the teams are some of the most winningest franchises in the NHL, and one of them will be eliminated. They have not had recent success, to say the least. I'm rooting for the Maple Leafs. I don't know. I like the idea of a Canadian symbol rather than just the word Canadians, and Canadians is also spelled wrong, so that's another gripe. What about you? You like the Maple Leafs, the Canadians here?
Oh man, I'll go with the Maple Leafs also, but to be honest, I don't actually care because I just like that this portion of the bracket is no matter what going to be all Canada. Yes. Because the winner gets the Winnipeg Jets. And I also kind of want the Jets to win just because, first of all, their logo is amazing. If anybody's looked at it, like, it's literally just a jet on top of a leaf. It's fantastic. But between those two, I'll just say Toronto. Cause again, like, if your logo is a leaf, I'm just going to support you because you need a little bit of extra support. So we'll go with Toronto here.
Sorry, I was going to say the last one. Yeah. So Robbie spoiled this, but the Jets Oilers, the Jets massacred the Oilers.
Yeah.
What is very interesting about this, for anyone who, you know, follows hockey more than I do, they know that how great Connor McDavid is. He's, I believe, 24 years old, up and coming, a star, a literal stud for the Oilers. And he put their team up. I think it was either 3-1 or 3-0, and then the Jets came back and won. This happened multiple times. So for the city of Edmonton, I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry. I'm going to warn you, Connor McDavid's probably going to want to get the hell out and go somewhere else. But right now, you don't have that problem. So good luck, honestly. But that, I believe, is all the matchups, unless I missed one.
I think you got them all. The only second round game or series that started so far is that Bruins Islanders series, and the Bruins are up 1-0. We'll have the Avalanche and the Golden Knights, the Hurricane and the Lightning, and like we said, the Jets versus the winner of Toronto and Vancouver, or Montreal, excuse me.
That was the other one. I actually forgot. The Avalanche beat the Blues, like, just massacred them. The Colorado Avalanche looked to be quite good. What I have read and seen, they seem to be the favorite in the West, at least, if not the favorite overall to win. So time will tell with that. I could 100% see the Lightning coming back to try and face them in the finals, and that could be a very interesting matchup. So time will tell with that. I will keep a little bit more of a watch on the NHL. The reason I'm a little bit off, one, I'm a little tired. But the other thing is, I have consumed an ungodly amount of basketball this past weekend. And
that's okay.
I know, Robbie, but like, I need just, what should we start with? Should we start with my Sixers? Should we start with your Heat?
Oh, no. We're starting with the Heat. So A, I can get this over with as fast as possible. And B, I get to dictate the conversation. Okay. But yeah, let's get into the NBA here as the playoffs also well underway. Not quite as far along as the NHL, but one team has advanced to the second round so far. That was the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis Antetokounmpo, Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton absolutely torched the Miami Heat 4-0. The clean sweep. Biggest takeaways for me as a Heat fan from this series. So first, on behalf of Miami, an absolute and utter lack of effort and discipline. Like, just, I mean, some of the shots they were putting up, especially from guys like Hero and Nunn, just made no sense. Jimmy lacked aggressiveness. Bam looked like a nervous wreck.
And that Victor Oladipo fellow just really didn't play, like, whatsoever.
Man,
it's awful.
Did not show up in the box score at all series long.
You hate useless. To see it. Absolutely, you hate to see it useless. From a former All-Star.
You really do, guys, folks. Oh, man, no, that was a tough series for me to watch, especially because game one, as messy as it was very close and competitive. Middleton hit a great shot at the end to seal it for Milwaukee, but then the rest of the series just blowout after blowout. Miami couldn't keep pace. Jimmy Butler shot, I think, under 30% from the field for that series, if I'm not mistaken. Very far cry from the Heat team that went to the finals last year and beat this Bucks team. All I'll say on behalf of Miami is, at least, you know, it took the Bucks 2 years to beat us. But man, so for Milwaukee, you could talk about any one of their big three. All of them showed up, but the one you have to talk about is Jrue Holiday. That is, first of all, the main difference in their roster from last year to this year. And especially against a team like Miami, where guards are not their strong suit, Jrue Holiday made an insurmountable impact for the Bucks and for the Heat's guards, because first of all, Kendrick Nunn was taken out of the game completely. He had zero impact on this series whatsoever. Goran Dragic became the only guard who could do anything, and he was still being shut down because Jrue Holiday is a better guard, or better defensively than Goran Dragic is offensively. And eventually was able to guard someone like Jimmy Butler, who made it, which made it so Jimmy was not going to get in any kind of groove to get the Heat even just one game. Those are my biggest takeaways. As I was doubting Jrue Holiday greatly, I was doubting, you know, I obviously assumed the Heat were going to win this series. And man, as somebody who maybe didn't think the same way as I did, what were your biggest takeaways from this series?
There's a few things. I knew the Heat were in trouble after game one, despite the fact it was a 2-point game, with just how bad the Bucks shot it from three in that game. I don't remember the exact stat, but it was horrendously bad. And to win that game, like, first of all, takes a great team to do that. But on top of that, assuming the Bucks can shoot at like a reasonably normal clip from three, they're going to kill them the next couple of games. And that's sort of what happens. Number two, Tyler Herro's a bum.
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 Oh, bum.
We talked this before the show. Robbie accused me of saying that he wrote me into this and said, I can't believe you and I were saying that they shouldn't trade Tyler Herro for James Harden. I said, no, 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 no. Don't rope me in with this. I refuse to be slandered like that. Tyler Herro, though, did not show up in the playoffs. What is funny is I watched the end of game four and they put all like the, you know, the subs and reserves in. Guess who else was out there? Tyler Herro.
Yep, yep.
Number three, I gotta ask, do you think this makes your NBA Finals appearance look like a fake, a shoe-in, some sort of dumb luck last year? Like, do you really think the Heat were frauds last year?
Are you asking me if this was a fluke?
I am asking you specifically. I don't want your honest answer.
No,
like, after getting shellacked.
So if you're going to base level look at it, yes, it looks like it was a fluke.
Good.
The only thing I will say on behalf of last year's Heat team is the East from this year to last year, completely different. There are three teams in the East that are absolutely dominant basketball teams this year, whereas last year it was pretty much just the Bucks, and the Heat were just conveniently built to beat the Bucks. They were one of two fully healthy teams that were, in my opinion, us and the Sixers, and probably the Lakers too, actually. But regardless, the East was just easier last year. I don't think it was a fluke in terms of the Heat being the best team in the East last year, because I think it was very clear that they were. But the Heat didn't get any better. In fact, they very clearly got a little bit worse from last year. The East as a conference got much better. I don't think it was necessarily fully a fluke, but it was something that myself as a Heat fan and most people should have seen as this probably isn't going to happen again. Bucks have built up. The Sixers are better and more, you know, their roster is more of a whole, and Brooklyn became what Brooklyn became. Should have probably seen this coming.
We talked this over text too. I really do think losing Jay Crowder in free agency was a big deal. Maybe more than we highlight, like kind of highlighted more. Like, Jay Crowder is definitely a great piece to have in terms of defensively and offensively. Tyler Herro's production bubble versus this year, like, completely different. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know whether it's a, I don't know, ego thing's kind of not the right word, just sort of this confidence level.
It's just a sophomore slump.
I'm going to hope for your case, but I think Tyler Herro just had a really good year last year, and kind of same with Kendrick Nunn to a degree. Like, Kendrick Nunn played okay, but not great.
Kenny Nunn's a great regular season player, but when it comes to the playoffs, it's like, he's pretty small. He's kind of easy to guard. If he's not hitting his threes, what impact does he really have? But no, Hero's the big question mark in Miami, because, you know, obviously if he can shoot the basketball, they're a different team. But he shot like crap. He shot like shit.
They need to make a song. Like, Jack Harlow needs to come with Tyler Hero too. And it's just him rip. It's a diss track, actually. That'll set him straight.
That actually would probably do Tyler Hero very well. So I'm not fully against that.
I think the other thing, though, and sorry to cut you off. No, like, we had this issue. I had this issue last year with the Sixers getting swept in the first round. Granted, maybe a little more excuses with the injuries of Ben Simmons, but it was still a hard look to watch the Celtics just run them over. Mm-hmm. So I do appreciate the Heat beating the Celtics last year in the Eastern Conference Finals, which I think makes their run look a lot less fluky. Now, granted, I think they were better built to handle them and they have better defenders. So we'll talk about the Nets and Celtics very shortly, but yeah, not a good year for the Heat. Some time in the offseason to regroup. Victor Oladipo is going to be a big question mark this offseason, what they're going to do with him. We will see with that, but that will be a very interesting development. Pat Riley always can sway free agents as well. Time will tell with that.
Kawhi.
We will get to that.
We'll get to that. That's a whole other story. But no, let's talk about your Sixers now, because they're playing exquisite basketball, up 3-0 over the Wizards. I don't think anybody really anticipated any resistance from Washington, maybe a game. But to be honest, in my opinion, if they were going to win one, it was going to be game one. It came up a little short, I think 5 points short. But Joel Embiid looks dominant. Tobias Harris looks dominant. Ben Simmons looks dominant. The Sixers big three is killing it. All five starters last night in double figures. As a Sixers fan, are you, does anything worry you yet? I guess I should say, like, have you seen anything that troubles you in this, you know, three game lead so far?
No, I'm not worried. I was a little bit worried game one just because the Wizards came back and made it a little bit of a game until like the fourth. But I'm not worried right now. And maybe as ignorant as it sounds, I'm not worried about the second round as well. We'll talk about the Knicks Hawks series momentarily, but I'm not really worried about that. I obviously am worried about the Eastern Conference Finals because you'll play most likely the Bucks or Nets. And both those teams are good. That's, you know, definitely an understatement even how great those teams are. But those will be tests. I think we're equipped to handle it, though. I think we really have both sides of the floor pretty well. We have Ben Simmons, who can lock down anyone 1 through 5. And Embiid's a great rim stopper. You got a few other pieces. I don't like that matchup of Danny Green on someone or Seth Curry when we get to the conference finals, but they're still serviceable defenders for the most part. Maybe not Seth Curry as much. Our reserves look good. We are playing the Wizards, who unfortunately Russell Westbrook can only do so much, and Bradley Beal is a little bit soft. He's a little bit of a diva on the court, but that's my one big takeaway from the series. Bradley Beal needs a better team around him. He can't be the guy.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Who knows? Maybe someone like Miami can draw him away. Again, we'll get to that.
Okay. Listen, I know you want the entire All-Stars on the Heat. You can get one. You go to a toy store and your parents are like, you can have one. Like, I want all of them. No.
It's like in Parks and Rec when they go to the drugstore. She's like, Andy, you can get 2 pieces of candy. And he comes back with one giant gummy bear.
This counts as one.
Giant teddy bear full of gummy berries. He goes, this counts as one. Fantastic stuff. Watch Parks and Rec. That'll be the next show we talk
about. That's 100%. Please watch that show. It's one of my favorite shows. Better than The Office, dare I say.
I haven't even watched much of this Sixers-Washington series just because it's pretty much gone exactly how I expected it to. If I'm being honest, I don't really expect the Sixers to come out of the first two rounds with any more than one loss. I don't even know if they will lose in the first two rounds, but they're looking absolutely excellent. Washington, you know, congratulations for getting here, but you weren't going to beat the Sixers. 8 seeds winning usually don't happen unless there's like an injury or something ridiculous, which we'll talk about when we get to the other side of the conference.
But actually, I'll take this as a segue. Game 2, end of it, Russell Westbrook was going locker room, got popcorn dumped on him by a fan.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Scumbag move. Not a good look, Philly. And then let's transition this into the other Eastern Conference matchup, which is the Knicks-Hawks. Trae Young gets spit on by a New York Knicks fan, which also not cool.
Not cool.
Please come on, people, come on. I tried so hard to be a respectful Philly fan, and you're not making it easy. Moving on, though. Don't do that. Like, you can't be so – I don't care. I don't care if Trae Young, like, walked over to you and said some, like, thing you'd hear in a Call of Duty Xbox Live party that I can't repeat because of how vulgar it is. Like, don't spit on him. The dude can probably, like, call up the Migos and have you – like, they can probably call anyone in Atlanta kick the shit out of you quite easily.
You don't want to call have a Trae Young call up his entourage. That sounds like
or any Tristan Thompson after he heard all that was like I would follow them to their house and just beat the shit out of them. Like,
beat them up. and that feels okay. The one thing I want to say about the popcorn though, my older brother and I were talking about this. It was an impressive angle because he essentially had to throw it under the like the tent or whatever. It was a great throw. You know, some pitchers, you know, the Phillies seem to be looking to add that guy to the bullpen. But
it's like in Parks and Rec with the whole pie throwing episode where they're trying to figure out like the trajectory went on. Just imagine that with the popcorn.
This episode is also brought to you by Parks and Recreation.
This episode is sponsored by NBC Peacock. Go ahead and watch it. Could you imagine that if we one day?
That'd be great.
I would sell my soul for an NBC Peacock ad read. Not actually, but I would love NBC execs, if you listen to this, give me Peacock subscriptions.
We're really trying here, guys.
I'm having a blast. I love acting like we sold out, even though we have none of these sponsorships other than Viget. Shout out Viget, by the way, for being an actual sponsor.
All right, let's talk about the Hawks and the Knicks here for a second, though. A series that I think I don't know about what you thought going in, but I thought was going to maybe go to seven. It's looking like it's going to be over kind of fast as Atlanta is up 3-1. They hit a pretty much buzzer beater in game one.
Right.
And then it's just been back and forth since, but the Hawks taking the last two. Julius Randle's looked inconsistent. RJ yep. Barrett's looked inconsistent. Derrick Rose has come into the starting lineup, which is awesome, but it hasn't quite had the punch that the Knicks really have needed. And Trae Young looks very clearly like the best player in this series. Is Atlanta going to close this thing out in five, or do the Knicks have a little bit of fight left in them?
I was honestly I really thought the Knicks were going to win five. Obviously, that is not possible at this point. But, yeah, the Hawks have looked phenomenal, and the Knicks have looked so inconsistent, which obviously isn't any groundbreaking analysis. It's just kind of if you watch the games, you could see it. I think it's going to go to six. I think the Knicks are going to win at Madison Square Garden, and then the Hawks will win in Atlanta. The Hawks seem to be unstoppable in Atlanta, like they're blowing the Knicks out. I will say, though, if the Knicks lose game five, Spike Lee may kill himself. Like, it may actually happen. That man looks utterly distraught like, it looks like a piece of his soul is leaving his body every time the Knicks lose.
Dude, and
honestly, I respect the hell out of that man for rooting for a franchise that is as cursed as the Knicks. Like, it is. I've talked about the Bills. I've talked about the Eagles. The Knicks are also probably a step below that in terms of curses and just sorry franchises. Because at least the Eagles or Bills put out good teams. The Knicks have had years of just awful teams that have not won a championship since Phil Jackson was a player.
I cannot imagine what the day-to-day life of a New York Knicks fan has to be like. There, it sounds tragic.
There was a tweet. I think this is so funny. It was like after the Knicks won game two, so even the series up, and it was like, we want Atlanta or like bring it to the A or whatever. And the tweet was like, Knicks fans after winning a series game by five, going back to their $2,000 studio apartment. And it's just an empty apartment with a radiator on it with like a Knicks flag. And that's how I feel all Knicks fans unfortunately are. They're so excited for a win, but then like the rest of their life is just in shambles.
The last time they were in the playoffs in 2013, I believe they won one playoff game in their first series and they dropped confetti from the sky because they won a playoff game.
That sounds like the 76ers a few years ago.
It was the most spectacular thing I've ever seen. Knicks fans, I do feel for you, but at this point, you know, we talked about how this series might be kind of like the offense versus defense style, how the game goes, and it's been offense. The Hawks have been pretty much unstoppable for the most part. Like I said, Trae Young has been masterful leading the Hawks offense.
But this is also good for the Knicks. I know, like, certain sports analysts are saying, if the Knicks don't win more than the game, it's a failure of a season. The fact they're in the playoffs and got a four seed, like, is honestly incredible. And I don't know if this lures necessarily a superstar in the offseason, but it really does help revitalize the Knicks. Your best player is Julius Randle, who up until this season, like, would probably inconsistently put up 25 a game. He's putting up 20, 25, doing great. Obviously a great piece, but he's not the guy the Knicks need to win a championship. And they know that. And so is Julius Randle, I'd hope. But this is good in terms of a slow progression towards not being poor. And
correct,
it starts with the season. Like, it's a good first step, and Knicks fans need to realize that.
No, yeah. Then, like you said, they're not going to get the big splash in free agency that they want every year. But what it is going to do is it's going to get you a player close to the caliber of Julius Randle. Whether he's a little better or a little worse, we'll see who's available, who they can bring in. But it's going to get you a second player that's that good. And that's how you kind of transition eventually into being able to draw in that superstar. They're in the right direction. A four seed is nothing to be ashamed of. You want a game in the playoffs. That's more than the defending Eastern Conference champs can say. This by no means is a failed season for the Knicks, especially given the roster at the beginning of the year, what it looked like and where it's at now. You know, it didn't look pretty going in as a Knicks fan, but here you are.
So, dare we say trust the process?
They'll have their own version of trust the process, but it's a longer process.
It is. And then last but not least, Celtics Nets. That we're seeing how dominant the Nets can actually be. I know the Celtics won game 3 in the Garden, but it took Jason Tatum scoring 50 points. And literally, I was watching the end of that game. First of all, unstoppable. Jason Tatum, without Jason Tatum, that team, and we'll say Jaylen Brown's injured for all intents and purposes, that team would not make the playoffs. They're awful.
No. Yeah.
Jason Tatum is unbelievably good and was on fire. And on fire is an understatement. And he dropped 50 points, and it still was a 6-point game. Just how good the Nets are and how dominant their superstars are. I know you don't like James Harden. James Harden, though, in the Nets is so much different and so much better than the James Harden in the Rockets. He dropped a casual 36 and was not – he wasn't doing all his dynamics. He was shooting when he needed to and was just making his shots.
It's easy when you play with superstars.
But
no, he's playing.
To be fair, he actually, it's not just a burden now. It's like, okay, I can actually play kind of the game I want to, I think, and not have to take every shot for the team. The other thing too, Kevin Durant scored, I think he had 30-some, like also a very dominant.
39, I think.
Yeah, very dominant game. The only real lone dud was Kyrie in this series. I'm not going to say he couldn't handle the booze. I think he just had a bad game, but did not look great. And that was kind of it. Like, the Nets will win this series. And if they don't, it's one of the worst, like, upsets of all time. Make no mistake about that. I got to say, though, I don't know if it's coaching staff or Kevin Durant. That entire third game, it was Jason Tatum gives the ball to Kemba or someone else. Sets a screen, Tatum gets the ball, and KD is on Tatum. The screen gets set, and he switches off. So Kyrie is on Jason Tatum the entire time. And this was rinse and repeat, probably 10 possessions in a row. So Jason Tatum probably scored 15 points in that span.
And that's why the Nets need to be a little bit worried, because you can't play defense like that.
But, like, how dumb are you? Like either – tell Kevin Durant to fight through a screen, maybe, or just it's so frustrating to watch because it was rinse and repeat. Kevin Durant was on Kemba Walker, who did nothing the entire night. I'm just sitting there stunned because Kyrie was trying his best, but he's not stopping Jason Tatum.
Exactly. You mentioned Kemba. He's actually going to be out for tonight's game 4, him and Robert Williams. So like, we expect Brooklyn to win this series. What this means is that Boston has probably won their lone game of the series. Maybe they can sneak one more if Tatum pops another 50 bomb. But at this point, it's looking rough. Romeo Langford going to be inserted into the starting lineup for Kemba. You mentioned Kyrie struggles. The thing is, that's what's going to happen with this Brooklyn Nets team. one of, you know, they're not all three going to be on every day, like in game two. That's just not how it's going to work. That's how, in theory, they could win the playoffs, but we don't know if that's how it's going to work, because teams like Milwaukee, teams like Philly, they have players that can defend these superstars, at least to an extent. It's going to be a little different than Boston, who, like we said, outside of their stars, don't really have much. And now with their stars being injured and it really just being Tatum and the bunch, you know, that they're not going to face the competition they need to get into that gear where they're just putting up 20 every night until Milwaukee. And, you know, then there's a guy that can guard Harden or Kyrie, and maybe they don't get, it's just, that's the way the Nets lose, is if they can't click and get into that rhythm of all of them, you know, hitting every night, pretty much, they may fall early. Milwaukee could beat them.
So that is the East, for the most part, uneventful. Let's be honest with ourselves. Like, all these series are going to go like 5-6 games for the most part.
The biggest thing is the fact that the Heat got swept. That's pretty much the biggest development. And it's like nothing really happened. They just lost in 4 games.
The West, though, has been anything but boring. The series with probably the least amount of action, and that's saying a lot, is the Jazz Grizzlies. Game one, the Grizzlies upset the Jazz, which was impressive.
Well, Donovan Mitchell was ruled out. He was not happy about it.
And he was furious. He felt lied to, all this. Played game two, caught the dub, despite Ja Morant having 47, I believe. And then game three last night, another good game. The Grizzlies put up a fight, tried to come back late, and Donovan Mitchell once again closed it out. I don't know what your thoughts are. I think the Jazz are going to get to the Western Conference Finals. I don't know if they're equipped to make a run. It really depends on the matchup. But make no mistake, Donovan Mitchell is playing as well as he did in the bubble last year. And I didn't like the fact they rushed him back from injury, but I think it was the right call. And, you know, Ja Morant is playing out of his mind in the playoffs as well. So that's, you know,
it's fun to watch.
Kind of unexpected based off his regular season. Like, Ja Morant played okay, like good in the regular season, but he's putting up like 47, like these insane stat lines, and just he's crushing it.
I want to say a couple of things about this series. First of all, as well as Memphis has been playing, Utah is going to win this series in 5 games, so long as Donovan Mitchell stays healthy. Sure. They can't match that offensive firepower. As well as Ja's playing, he's essentially been it for them.
Yeah.
Number two, just the concept of Mike Conley facing Ja Morant, facing the Memphis Grizzlies. There was a point last night where they were kind of, you know, he and Ja were going back and forth a little bit. It was just this like really cool thing to see. Obviously, Conley, the longtime Memphis Grizzly, made a Western Conference Finals appearance with them, and now going up against them in the first round of the playoffs. It was just really cool as a fan of basketball. And I'm sure it was a really cool moment for Mike Conley to just be like, wow, this is like the transition of my career. And I'm literally seeing it before my eyes. So I thought that was really cool. And then my final takeaway from this is I'm very high on Ja Morant. But I want to ask you right now, if you were a franchise moving forward, who would you rather have, Ja Morant or Jason Tatum?
Jason Tatum, 100%.
I disagree.
I don't know about that. Ja Morant can do a lot, but Tatum's scoring abilities and his height and his athleticism is like something that Ja unfortunately just doesn't have. Like, he has the athleticism, but he's smaller. And
yeah, that's fair.
Ja Morant's no Steph Curry. Is like, he's incredible. He's like Russell Westbrook and a better shooter.
He might be Derrick Rose.
Okay, then he will tear his ACL at some point. My thought is
if he can stay healthy, that's my biggest fear for him. Like, I do think he can win an MVP, and I don't think Jason Tatum's ever going to win an MVP. And I'm not necessarily saying that means he's the best, but like, when I think of who the best of the best are, I think Tatum has progressed very well as an NBA player. Like you said, an elite scoring talent, but pretty below, or not below average, but like average on defense. He's something special on that. And Ja, I think Ja is going to be a two-way superstar. And that's the biggest difference to me, is that he's going to be able to get – he's not going to put up quite as many points as Tatum per year, but he clearly can score. But defensively speaking, I think Ja can be an absolute superstar, whereas that's the area where I think Tatum wouldn't be able to push and break through that top five, you know, player in the NBA.
Probably saw I wrote a note down on my paper. It is Twitter poll, Tatum versus Ja. If I don't see 80-20 on that, I will be disappointed. But the like literally as I looked at my phone, Bleacher Report, Tatum mixes up KD. I'm not saying Ja can't do that. Like Ja is incredibly athletic and you know great ball handler. But Tatum is a lot like LeBron in the sense that he can, despite being how defended he is, can just score at will and make his own shot. And while we love, like, Ja Morant is no Steph Curry. It's a bad comparison, but that idea of Steph Curry versus LeBron, while we love Steph Curry and just is probably one of the best shooters of all time, he's not LeBron James. Like, there's a different echelon. And that MVP argument, fine. Like, I don't disagree with it because Ja is going to have to be the guy for his team while Jason Tatum may have Jaylen Brown or Kemba Walker to like help him out. But like I said before, the Celtics would be utter bums if Jason Tatum was not on this playoff team. And Jaylen Brown helps out too, but that's interesting. We will let our fans decide. And I'm very curious to see the results because
I thought you'd enjoy that one.
That's scathingly hot, but trust me, there's going to be probably some worse takes for me in a little bit. Let's go to the next tame series to a degree.
I was about to say, what would that be?
It's the Blazers Nuggets, but it's not tame by any means. It's 2-2 right now.
Yeah, no, that's going seven.
I think that is going seven. The Nuggets are matched up well with the Trailblazers. With Jamal Murray, I think it would really put him over, but Damian Lillard is playing out of his mind. Norman Powell had a game and a half last night. CJ McCollum's always a great player. But despite all this, the Nuggets are hanging around. Jokic is playing like the MVP he's probably going to get.
A game-winning tip-in in game three.
Michael Porter Jr. is also playing pretty well. Aaron Gordon's helping out. And then Austin Rivers. Austin Rivers is playing
of the year.
I had a text Jeffrey from Box Office QBs. He's probably loving the fact that Nuggets are actually like good. I know he's probably crying that Jamal Murray's out, but him and what's our boy Faku? Is that
Faku or Faku? I don't know how you say his nickname, but Facundo Campazzo.
Yes, of course. Maybe the slickest passer of all time other than Jason Williams. Pretty. Beautiful passes, but he is actually playing reasonably good minutes. Yeah, I think that series, I'm torn that series though. I like the Nuggets, but also like CJ being Lehigh, like help me out here. What do I do?
Man, no, it's really tough. Like, cause even without Murray, the Nuggets might be the better team. The only way I really like I see this going to seven no matter what. The only way I really see this series ending in Portland's favor is if the last seconds of the game the ball's in Damian Lillard's hands. Genuinely, I think that's how they win the series because it just always seems to happen like that in the playoffs for them. It comes down to does Dame make this great shot, and history tells that he usually does. The thing for the Nuggets is, can you avoid that situation? If it comes down to a last second shot, can you be the team with the ball, or can you actually defend Damian Lillard, or can you make it so there is no situation where Damian Lillard can hit some dumb step back three and wave you goodbye? I mean, just you got to keep yourself out of that situation. But if I'm like, but what I'm saying is that if I'm banking on that for the Blazers winning, I think that means I do think Denver's going to come out on top of this series.
I would tend to agree with that. And I wouldn't like to see a poster of Damian Lillard waving to Jokic. I think that would just make me sad. I just respect both superstars. Like, I love the beef Damian Lillard had with OKC. And, you know, have what you want about Russell Westbrook, like, whatever opinion. Like, Russell Westbrook is fun to root for and also root against. So, like, to me, that was fun. But I love Jokic, and Damian Lillard's hard not to root for either, along with CJ. So we'll see. That one's going to be very intriguing. That one's, like you said, going to come down to the wire. I really do wish Jamal Murray's on that team, though. I'd love to see them in full action because they're playing very well without him.
They could go on a run. Oh, yeah.
All right. Which LA team do we do next? I don't think there's any right.
Let's save LeBron till the end. Let's go with the Clippers and the Mavericks here. Dallas jumped out to a 2-0 lead and then started playing like Dallas again.
Yeah, I will say Tim Hardaway Jr. was playing quite well. Like,
oh yeah,
I had talked earlier. I did not see a world the Mavericks were going to play well in the playoffs because they just did not look good in the regular season. Porzingis has been hurt. So he's playing now, but their three-point shooting these playoffs have been incredible. Luka has looked like the Luka of last year rather than a little bit like this year. They're playing great. But yeah, the Clippers stole one in Dallas in game three. Luka is playing tonight or recording this before they play game four. But it seems like he's a little bit hurt. And the Clippers, I don't know if they have a chip on their shoulder necessarily because it's hard for the Clippers to ever have a chip on their shoulder. They're so indifferent to everything. But to me, I think the Clippers are going to win tonight. I could be dead wrong about it. But you've talked so negatively about the Clippers. I've talked so highly about the Clippers. We're very polarized in that subject. We're gonna be negative here. Let's say the Clippers lose in the first round. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, do you just fire Tyronn Lue out of a cannon? Like, you have to.
You have to at least consider it. Because they're the Clippers and they're trying to keep Kawhi, they probably wouldn't. But,
all right,
yeah, that'd be a bad look.
So, we'll start less toxic. Let's just say you keep Tyronn Lue. If you're Kawhi Leonard, do you force your way out? The answer is 100% yes.
Oh, well, first of all, I think his contract's up, or at least he has an option.
Yes.
I believe he could enter free agency this year if he wants to, so I assume he will regardless, just because worst case, they'll re-sign you. You're Kawhi Leonard. But test your value, see if there's a better situation, especially because if you have two early exits with a team that you went to win championships with, you might want to reconsider at that point. But to be honest, I actually don't know if the Mavericks are going to win another game this series. If the Clippers can play the way they played in game three, which I think they are capable of, but it comes down to the consistency of players like Paul George, the health of players like Serge Ibaka, because he's really their only useful big man. I love you, Boogie and Zubats, but you're not quite as effective. It really just comes down to the guys on the court. Can they really perform? Can they perform for long amounts of time, not get tired and have to come out every few minutes? But I think they can do it. And like you said, I've been talking pretty low of this Clippers team, but man, Kawhi Leonard is fucking good at basketball. Oh my God.
I'm saying, like, people have disparaged that man since he won his championship, but I saw with my own two eyes. I watched him decimate the Sixers. I know how good he is. And that's why I always hold the Clippers to a higher standard, because I know how good Kawhi Leonard is and I know how good Paul George can be. And when you got someone like Marcus Morris shooting like 29%, it's not going to be cut out despite Kawhi dropping 41. What I will say, though, is I want to get very toxic right now because that's kind of my MO at this point. Kawhi Leonard loses in the first round. Oof. He wants out. Where does he go? And you talked about the Heat. I want to give you something even better.
Oh, no.
The Warriors.
No.
Yes.
No.
Okay, no. I want you to listen to this. How good basketball would be. Steph Curry, a healthy Klay Thompson, and Kawhi Leonard instead of Kelly Oubre or Andrew Wiggins. That, to me, people are going to hate that because the Warriors are going to be a super team again, quote unquote. But, oh, my goodness. That is awesome.
That is literally the dream.
That is like my wet dream. 100%
might be, like, you know, offensively speaking, probably not, but overall might be a better team on paper than the version with Durant. Obviously, with the injury and the aging of some of the players, they are a little bit worse at this point. But, like, on paper, those four players together would be, in my opinion, a little scarier than with Durant. God, don't say that. Don't speak that into existence. Yeah. Like, I know I'm an insufferable Heat fan, but the Heat have to be more acceptable than that option.
But I think, like, imagine that Kawhi tried to form a super team and is like, okay, this didn't work. I'm actually going to, like, speak this into existence and do a sign trade to get, like, Kelly Oubre or Andrew Wiggins. Ooh, better yet, Andrew Wiggins and Paul George team up. That just sounds great.
That sounds like nothing. That sounds like the worst team in basketball.
Or Andrew Wiggins goes back to the Timberwolves and teams up with Anthony Edwards.
Now, that's a thought. That's the exact same basketball player, just slightly aged. I want to change this to Luka for just a second, because I remembered a tweet that I saw that I thought was really funny. It was, I think Luka and Kristaps are the modern day version of Kobe and Shaq. except for the fact that Luke is both of them.
That's pretty fair, because Porzingis is pretty useless. Maxi Kleber is more useful.
Yes, you're right. To me, Kristaps Porzingis is 7'3" sack of potatoes. Like, he just does nothing. He can hit threes every once in a while, and he blocks a shit ton of shots because he's 9 feet tall. But, I mean, good Lord, he's not that useful. You can only use him in certain situations. I mean, for God's sakes, put Boban on the court if you're just going to play Kristaps. Like, I don't see his value quite as much as a lot of other people like to. I think they could trade him for two players or even one other player that would fit better with Luka. I think they just like the idea of an all-offense team because it works for Luka. But I think if they could trade him for more of a two-way player, it's going to go the long run. Because like I said, I don't even know if they're going to make it out of the first round.
The problem is Porzingis' values. It's pretty much bottom out at this point. Like when the Mavs traded for Porzingis, he was hurt, but we saw what he could do for a pretty crummy Knicks team. And he could do a lot. Like when he's healthy, he's dangerously good. He is a literal unicorn. But right now, he hasn't been playing well. Like, you're right. The Mavs could get assets for him. But at this point, the idea of him maybe getting healthy and blossoming is just worth more than what you're going to get from him. It's kind of like, the Markel Fultz situation, except the Sixers were like, we're done with this. Like,
yeah, it's the wrong way. Like, they pulled the trigger, whereas maybe Dallas won't.
Yeah.
That's fair. I can understand that. But yeah, either way, I'm hoping that the series gets a little more competitive. As much as I think it'd be hilarious if the Clippers lose, I actually do kind of want them to win because I do still want the LA Conference Finals if it's possible. Speaking of. So one last series to get to here. The Lakers and the Suns, the 2 versus 7, it has gone back and forth nicely. Like I said, tied up at 2 apiece with Phoenix just defeating the Lakers to tie it up today. Anthony Davis left in the second quarter. He did not return with what I believe was, I had it written down, a left groin strain. Obviously going to make him questionable for the next game.
He pulled his left ball sack.
The Lakers were able to bring it close towards the end, but then Jay Crowder hit a big three, put the Suns back up 10, and the rest was history. So the only question that matters before we can, you know, review what's happened so far, are the Lakers going to be able to win this series if Davis is going to – potentially if Davis is out for the rest of it?
If Davis is actually out for the rest of the series, the answer is no. I'm curious to see how hurt he is. LeBron is a spectacular player, but he needs Anthony Davis with him. Because otherwise, I just think the Suns have enough talent to outmatch just LeBron. Like, they won't be able to stop him. They can only hope to contain him, of course. But I don't know. Anthony Davis really is the X factor. We talk a lot about, you know, how great LeBron is, but without Anthony Davis, that team would be pretty crummy, to say the least. And be a lot like the Lakers of 2019.
First year.
Yeah, exactly. Now, granted, he got hurt, but you see my point. So the Suns, though, have not been playing well either. But without Anthony Davis to worry about, like, okay, you got to worry about Andre Drummond. That's a lot easier to deal with. Andre Drummond and AD was a lot to deal with because you have Ayton and then some other forward trying to guard, most likely Drummond. That was kind of a mess. So if AD is generally out for the series, I could see a world where the Suns actually do not get upset. But if AD can play, it's going to be a slugfest because these games thus far have been close. My dad does not watch the NBA a whole lot, but he was watching the game one of the Lakers Suns and he was getting into it. He's like, stay on the ground, LeBron. And LeBron stayed on the ground for 80 seconds after like getting pushed over by Chris Paul. So it's whatever.
The passion of LeBron haters is truly respected even by a LeBron lover as much as myself.
It's yeah. I don't think I can hate LeBron for his decision to go to Miami anymore. I just hate the fact he's like, his flops are just, they're honestly comical at this point.
They've gotten insufferable.
Yeah. Insufferable is the right word.
It's even I, who, you know, somebody who sucks LeBron James' dick as much as I do. It's too much. You're flopping too much. I can't really argue on your behalf anymore for that. I'll say this. I don't think the series is definitively over without Anthony Davis, just because I do still believe in the LeBron James factor. And also, you know, the health of Chris Paul could be an underlying issue that comes up, whether it's this series or in the future, because clearly he's playing through something right now, some kind of shoulder injury. But for the Lakers, it isn't even on LeBron. Obviously, LeBron's going to, you know, be expected to be putting up a 40-point triple-double every night, because that's what happens every year in the playoffs when the Lakers start to struggle or somebody gets hurt or whoever, you know, whatever team he's on faces adversity. So it's going to be the other players. If someone like Schroeder has to be able to, A, stay on the court because he gets ejected a decent amount, but be hitting his shots. Players like Harrell have to be able to step up, and Drummond, of course, has to be able to step up. And then Kuzma, who we would presume would take Anthony Davis's spot in the starting lineup. It's those guys. They have to give LeBron support, because as good as this Suns team is, they're still beatable. You know, they're a great team, but you can still do it, especially when LeBron James is on your team. You got to buy in. You got to be willing to sacrifice a little bit more now. That's the world where they do it, though. But if those guys can't step up, you know, this could even be done sooner than we think.
Yeah, and time will tell with that. Right now, the Lakers, I believe, are still the favorites to win the series, which is, you know, incredible considering, you know, they're a 7 seed. I guess one last thing, if we're done with the current update for the NBA playoffs, former Jazz center, big man, Mark Eaton, unfortunately passed away. I believe it was yesterday. Member of, I believe, both the 97 and 98 finals teams, 96, 97, 97, 98. Yeah. So when Stockton and Malone were there, definitely a pivotal role player, and unfortunately passed away. So thoughts and prayers to his friends and family, and, you know, Jazz organization, I'm sure, is hurting a bit, but thoughts and prayers to them.
All right. We are going to transition on here into our next segment here. We're going to talk a little bit about our partner or sponsor that we partner with, and then move it on into a conversation about the continued NBA playoffs. So Alex, if you want to take it away here.
Absolutely. So as we mentioned at the top of the show, partnering with Vigit, free to use app. The idea is you bet fake coins, win real prizes. And for the NBA playoffs, no exception. The people at Vigit, it's like they're almost brain dead. They're just giving away money to people who are good at predicting stuff. They're giving away $5,000 to the top 100 people in their contest. So if you like free money and are smarter than Robbie and I, which is probably all of you who listen to this, first of all, download Vigit. It's a green V. Can't miss it on the App Store. Use code ALLSTARS. Help and support us. And then you can join leagues in it. Type in bet99. Join the NBA league and bet on the NBA games. Literally, I picked the Sixers to win last night. I got it right. And now I'm in 103 place. I just need to move up 3 spots and I'll be winning a share of $5,000. Easy money. And I love money. I know you do too. Easy money. Also, if you beat Robbie or I, we'll give you a shout out in the show and you can brag all you want to us. That shouldn't be hard, because Robbie and I, despite all the basketball we watch, are a little bit brain dead when it comes to actually making these bets.
Episodes.
Yes, of course. That's mainly you, but we'll move past that.
Yeah, no, I am smarter than a fifth grader, though.
That is true. Download the app now, sign up, and go and win some money. It's free money. And also, once you win part of that $5,000 and you have all these coins, you can trade those coins in for prizes, like Amazon gift cards. If you're incredibly good, you can get a PS5. If anyone wins that, like, please let me know. I will be bowing down to you. I'll be cowtown. Remember that? I'll be cowtown to that.
That's a great story that we're going to save for the second episode this week, our non-sports episode. But that's a wonderful story. Thank you for bringing that up in my mind.
Absolutely. But we'll shut up now. If you are a little bit brain dead like we are, you're going to listen to our predictions now, because we're going to talk about the rest of the NBA playoffs, kind of give you who we think is going to win these matchups. Obviously, we're not going to go into hypothetical game 1 through 7s for all these series, so that's kind of on you to bet, but we'll give you at least an idea of who we think is going to win the series outright based off of kind of what we think. So we'll start with the East. Sure. We're going to assume Sixers are going to win their matchup.
Yes, we are going to assume that.
Dare we say. And then I think they're going to play the Hawks.
I would agree with that at this point. As much fun as seeing the Sixers sweep the Knicks would have been.
And then we'll have Bucks Nets, not Celtics. I was looking at the score. Bucks Nets. I think the Sixers will go to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think they'll beat the Hawks probably in five, maybe four, but
I'm going to pretty confidently say four. I don't think the Hawks can actually do it. Ben Simmons is going to make Trae Young look like hot trash.
You're not wrong, but I like to just overestimate that way. When they sweep them, it'll look good on my part. I honestly do think
humble as always.
That's it's it ain't easy being a Sixers fan. But I do think it's going to be a 4 or 5 game series. Like, I really do think the Sixers are going to expose the Hawks, not too hard. But the other series, Bucks Nets, what happens there? I think the Nets are going to win in seven.
I think the Bucks are going to win in six.
That's fair. It's going to come down to how well they can lock down Harden.
You assume that Drew is going to guard. I assume Drew's going to guard Harden, because Harden is the one that, as great of a scorer as Kyrie Irving is, Harden does more. And everybody knows Harden's the point guard. Harden's the one facilitating and rebounding. If you can take Harden out, I think that impacts winning more than taking Kyrie out, because Kyrie and Durant score in very similar ways. If you have two guys trying to do the exact same thing without your main facilitator, you know, that's a bit of a cog in the system. And what Milwaukee's strength is defense. So if you're forcing them into tough shots, then it's going to get your team in rhythm. Milwaukee's maybe the best or second best transition team in basketball. Go from defense to Giannis running the fast break. I think they can dictate. You know, they completely and utterly dominated the pace of the Heat series. They were in control of just about every second of that series. If they can get any bit of that in the next round against Brooklyn, I think they're going to win, because whereas they have somebody that can at least match up again, you know, Giannis can guard Durant and Holiday can guard one of Harden or Kyrie, it's not the same going the other way. They don't really have somebody to put on Middleton. They have bodies you can put on Giannis, but Durant's never been an elite level defender. And then neither Kyrie nor Harden are great defensive players. So Drew Holiday can continue his dominance on that end. I was very impressed by the Bucks in that Heat series. I really did think the Heat were at least going to win one game, and the Bucks were strong throughout, although I think it was also a bit of a lackluster performance by Miami. But regardless, Milwaukee looked very strong. I don't want to discredit that in any way. The role players stepped up. You know, they lost DiVincenzo for the playoffs, so guys like Coddington and Forbes and Jeff Teague, they're all going to have to start stepping up. But I think Milwaukee can do it. I don't think they're going to beat Philly, and we can get to that in just a second here, but I think they're going to beat Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting matchup. I honestly, it's going to come down to how well the big three plays together. Like, they look great in the Celtics series. I don't know how much Giannis is going to be able to stop Kevin Durant. I know he's like freakishly good at defense, but Kevin Durant can do a damn lot. And that's kind of I'm confident Drew Holiday can lock up Kyrie enough, and Drew Holiday can score enough on Kyrie. The Chris Middleton matchup is interesting though, because Chris Middleton, while he does score, he kind of is catch and shoot. He doesn't really do a whole lot, like, in terms of making his own plays. James Harden do a lot of that. I'm intrigued. I think we're going to need to see a game or two, which is why I'm still saying Nets in seven, just because I think the Bucks are going to have to catch fire from three to beat them, and that's going to be a little bit tricky, but who knows? It's very possible. That's a tough matchup to predict.
You know, that might be the toughest matchup to predict, because so let's move on here to the conference finals. We both have Philly in. Okay, I know you're a Sixers fan, so it's going to be tough, but does your decision differ based off if they play Milwaukee or Brooklyn?
It gets harder. I really do think they can beat Milwaukee, and I'm kind of confident about that just because they're built very similarly in terms of teams. I think Philly can take them. I'm a little bit worried about the Nets. They're a lot like the Hawks in the sense that they can probably shoot their way out of problems. I don't mean the Hawks can, like, the Hawks are not going to overtake Philly, but that idea of just being able to score at will, that terrifies me a bit. Cause sometimes, not as much this year as like last year, but sometimes Philly gets in those offensive ruts where they just don't do a whole lot. When they're on fire, they are the best team in the league. Like, no question about it. And I would confidently say that. But when they get into a bit of a rut, sometimes things sort of fall off and that gets a little dicey, especially if the Nets catch fire, which will 100% happen at some point.
Yeah. I'm also with you in the sense of it's a little tougher with Brooklyn. Like I said, I still think Milwaukee's going to win against Brooklyn, but Brooklyn is a tougher matchup for Philly than Milwaukee is. You match up a little more directly. You know, Tobias can guard Middleton, Joel can take Giannis to an extent. Ben Simmons on Drew, it kind of lines up a little nicer. Whereas with Brooklyn, it's like, again, Ben can guard one of their two star guards, you assume probably Harden. Toby can probably be the primary defender on Durant. That's probably the best option you guys have. Maybe Danny Green. But Joe is going to be kind of stuck in no man's land on defense because they're either going to be playing like a Jeff Green type who is spreading the floor and keeping Embiid out of the paint, or Blake Griffin, who is kind of a mix what you're going to get with Griffin, whether he's in a facilitating role, a shooting role, an attacking the basket role. They match up a little different. However, I don't think it matters entirely, and I do think that the Sixers are the best locked team to take to win the Eastern Conference. I'm just going to say that I don't think we've seen a physically dominant player such as Joel Embiid since Shaquille O'Neal, just physically speaking, in terms of ability to back somebody down to dominate where you want to go. If the Sixers can stay healthy, I would say they beat Brooklyn in seven. I would say they will beat Milwaukee in six or seven.
I think six for Milwaukee. I could see a seven game slugfest, and hopefully we don't get buzzer beater this time. Right. But that'll be interesting. We'll move to the West then. Jazz, I believe, will beat the Grizzlies.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think Memphis is going to take another game.
Okay. And then the 4 or 5 would play them. That would be the Clippers or the Mavericks. I'm going to hope the Clippers pull that out as much as I'm an agent of chaos, because I want to see the Jazz Clippers. I think that'll be a much better series than Mavericks Jazz. I think the Jazz would kill the Mavs, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But Jazz Clippers, who wins that series? I could see the Jazz in seven or Jazz in six.
Weird series. Like, I feel like all signs are pointing to like the Clippers would win this series, but like I keep saying that there seems to be this at least one piece missing from this Clippers team that hasn't put them over that edge yet. Oh, this is tough because, oh man, if last year had never happened, I would have said the Clippers, no question, but the Clippers fell apart in the second round of the playoffs last year. And I'm just, that's in the back of my mind now. It's such a real possibility.
It's in the back of everyone's mind, the Clippers too.
I'm gonna say Kawhi has what it takes to get it done. I think it would go six or seven. I'll say they'd win in six because I think they have a better chance to end it on their home court than they would in Utah. But that's a series that, man, every second of that series is going to mean so much. But yeah, I mean, guarding Kawhi and Paul George is a tall task, especially for a team that plays two undersized guards like Utah. I think it'd be tough.
I think my lock to everyone listening is game one of that series. If it is Jazz Clippers, the Jazz will win game one. Like, okay. I think they'll cover, or like, I don't know about blow out, but I really do think the Clippers are going to come out slow and sluggish. And then we're kind of going to see how they adapt.
I actually think that's a very, very good analysis. I think that's very likely to happen. Yeah, I got you.
I do. I do. Just watch. I want to take this clip right here and then pair it up with the Clippers blowing out the Jazz in game one.
Only time will tell, my friend.
Only time will tell.
Moving down, we talked about that tough Portland-Denver series. It's so tough, but I'm just going to say Denver because Nick Jokic, all signs point to him being the MVP this year. If he is, in fact, the MVP, he will be able to get it done. He will be able to handle, you know, Dame's not an MVP finalist, but he definitely had to have his name in the conversation. So two of the best players in the league going at each other. If you're an MVP, you're going to win. I'm going to put my faith in Jokic here for the first time because I, for whatever reason, really don't like this Nuggets team. And I am going to say LeBron's going to win it, regardless of Anthony Davis. I think there's almost too much pressure on LeBron James to not lose in the first round, because that's like the one last thing he definitively has on Jordan, is that he hasn't lost in the first round yet. And I think he's going to carry that chip. I feel so bad because I always want Chris Paul to do well in the playoffs.
We all do.
This team isn't quite there. They had an exceptional regular season, but just we'll see if they can get it done. But I actually, in that case, also think the Lakers would prevail to the conference finals, because a banged up Denver versus a banged up LA still feels like it's going to favor LA. I know Davis and Murray aren't quite the same piece to lose, but if you give LeBron any kind of mental edge, he will exploit it. And I think that's what he can do against a still less experienced Denver team than this Lakers team. Man, I like don't want to say it's going to be an LA conference finals, because it does not feel like it's going to be.
Yeah, I'd have a hard time seeing it. I mean, if LeBron gets past the Suns, I think he'll go to the finals, as dumb as that sounds.
I agree.
But
I think this is his toughest playoff series until the finals.
Because the Nugget, like, I think he'd beat the Blazers in five. I think he'd also beat the Nuggets in five.
Yeah.
Another guarantee, game one of that series, if the Lakers played the Nuggets, even without AD, I bet you the Lakers would, I don't know about blow them out, but would win.
I also guarantee if they play the Blazers will win game one and then lose the next four.
Yeah, probably will happen. the one thing I will say, if AD's out, I do think the Suns like will push it. And I think they could take it. And would love a nice toxic offseason of talking about LeBron James and what went wrong. But
I'm going to amend this, actually. I think Utah is going to beat the Clippers.
Okay.
I've been thinking about this a lot. Their system is just so perfected for the roster they have. And I think that's very similar to Miami of last year, where it was just like everything kind of fell in line. And I don't know if they're going to make it to the finals, because, again, you always got to surmount LeBron or Jokic, whoever it's going to be. But I do think they can actually beat the Clippers, and that's where I think, because the other thing is, if it doesn't sound like it's, at least at this point, that it's anything too major for Davis, like he's going to miss the rest of the playoffs or anything. So if he's back by the conference finals, I don't think there's a world where the Lakers lose in any way.
I don't disagree with that. I just don't think I think it's going to be a little too like late when he gets back. And that I think is going to be the problem.
That's fair.
My prediction is contingent on AD being out. If AD's not out, the Lakers will win that series. But I think the Suns are going to win the series if AD doesn't play.
Okay.
I don't think LeBron can do it alone. I know that's definitely a recipe for disaster, having that thought. But
I do what they do to Charles Barkley, write down, doesn't think LeBron can do it alone.
Doesn't think LeBron's elite. Okay. Oh, boy. It's tough, but I really do think Chris Paul, if Chris Paul's not in that team, no shot in hell, but Chris Paul can do wonders and has that mental fortitude to be able to take down superstars like that.
I was about to say, if anyone can do it, it'd be Chris Paul.
Banana boat, baby. So then after that, let's say the Suns Nuggets. That's a weird matchup that I think goes to six, but I can't see the Suns losing that either.
I don't think, especially if Ayton continues to play the way he's been playing so far in the playoffs, he'll be able to do enough to counter Jokic.
So what we've established here, folks, is whoever wins the Suns versus Lakers is going to the Western Conference Final.
Probably going to the NBA Finals for the Suns is if Chris Paul
stays. We had this argument a few weeks ago. Jazz versus Suns.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think, I don't know what I said, but I can see the Jazz actually winning that. I think Donovan Mitchell is playing out of his mind. And whilst the Suns are great, I think there's a few like little chips that are kind of showing for the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, I agree. I also think Utah would win. And I think that would become like, who's a better team? I actually maybe think Phoenix.
Yeah.
But I can't disregard the past and history. And I really think in a long playoff run, Chris Paul's injuries will catch up at some point. I don't think he's going to play a full Western Conference Finals if he gets there. It just, it's so unfortunate to say, but I mean, it's round one and he's already got a shoulder issue. It's just tough for him to get through an entire season and playoff run. That's where I think the Suns are going to get drawn down, because they are such a different team when he's not their starting point guard.
Okay. Just for the sake of hypotheticals, I would love to talk more about this. We have three potential teams in the West we think are going to make it: the Jazz, the Suns, and the Lakers. I do, like, you could throw the Clippers in there, but I do not think the Clippers are going to make it to the finals, no matter how high I am on them. And then we kind of came to consensus about Philly.
Yes.
Let's look at all those matchups, because I think the team that could beat Philly is probably the least deserving to beat Philly. I think the Philly will decimate the Utah Jazz.
Yes.
Without question. No, I think the Philly could beat the Lakers.
Okay.
I do not think they could beat the Suns for whatever reason. I don't know why. The Suns, for whatever reason, just have the Sixers number. It's weird to say, because the Sixers should match up well, but Devin Booker, I don't know if it's that Kendall Jenner drama with Ben Simmons, but like, Devin Booker just will torch the Sixers every time.
Interesting. Okay, I'm going to say this. They play Utah. They win in five.
Yes.
And I don't even question it. Like,
maybe six. Maybe some dumb fluke six, but like, 100%. I think five.
Ben Simmons scored 40 points against the Utah Jazz.
That is right.
They will be winning that series in five games. The Lakers, that truly depends on the health of Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is out. The Sixers probably win in five or six.
Right.
Anthony Davis is in. I will not hesitate to say that the Los Angeles Lakers will beat the Philadelphia 76ers. In how many games? Oof. Six is the minimum.
Sure, sure.
Truly, okay. Could be seven. And if it goes seven, Philly might actually win, because Philly's home court is incredible. That's a little tougher, but I will favor LeBron and Davis if they're both healthy. Phoenix. Sorry, no, go ahead.
No, I just want to talk about the Lakers, because I do think the Sixers can beat the Lakers even with AD healthy. I just think they match up well with them. Like, Ben Simmons on LeBron, while he's not going to fully stop LeBron, it's not the point. I think Ben Simmons would do a pretty damn good job. Couple that with, I think the role players on the Sixers are playing better than the role players on the Lakers, 100%.
I agree with that.
Tobias Harris, he's going to – if Kuzma's on him, he'll kill Kuzma. If Andre Drummond's on him, he'll have a field day with him, as long as he just stays 5 feet away from the basket. And then, I mean, Tyrese Maxey's playing pretty well. Korkmaz can add a few points. Even Dwight Howard as relief for Embiid is going to provide some much-needed stuff. It's – not a great defensive matchup for Howard, but
Dwight Howard would bring an energy against the Lakers just because of the fact that he won with the Lakers last year.
And Danny Green as well. I mean, Danny Green.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily. Danny Green, who do you have to guard? Probably Schroeder, maybe, he'd
probably be the one on Schroeder. Yeah. He'd probably be on Schroeder. You put Curry on whoever the shooting guard is. Whether it be KCP, Wesley Matthews.
KCP is such a useless player. Oh, my God.
You want to hear some dumb shit, though?
Sure.
KCP got the same amount of Defensive Player of the Year votes as both Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo.
Like, all time or this year?
This year.
So zero?
I think it was like seven or something.
What?
It was just bad.
All right. Well, I hate the NBA. The Suns, though, for whatever reason, I know it sounds so far-fetched. I really, on paper, the Sixers should kill them, but at the same time, like, whatever reason, the Suns just play well against the Sixers.
I'll continue to bring it back to the one difference maker Phoenix has, Chris Paul. Let's talk about this in a healthy situation for both teams. No lingering issues from a long playoff run or anything like that. You assume Ben Simmons guards Devin Booker, because that's the scorer. You know, Chris Paul is the initiator of the offense, but if you put Simmons on Booker, you know, Booker will do his thing for the most part, but that's your best bet of limiting him. The issue becomes you don't have another player that you could confidently put on Chris Paul to limit his impact. And that's the biggest thing, is that Chris Paul, no question, is the smartest player in that series. And that's where Phoenix would have the advantage over Philly, especially because this is Philly's deepest, you know, playoff run in a long time, especially for the core of the roster. You know, Danny Green's been here before, Dwight Howard's been here before, but Simmons, Tobias Harris, and JoJo, this would be uncharted territory for them. The finals would be brand new to them. Obviously it would be to Chris Paul too, but at least Chris Paul's an age veteran. He's been deep into the playoffs before. I think he'd be able to compose himself. So you'd have to find a way to limit his impact without taking Ben Simmons off of Devin Booker. And that's the only issue Philly really seems to have when playing Phoenix, is that you either can't do that or Devin Booker scoring on Ben Simmons, like it doesn't even matter.
Well, that was good.
So sorry, I was going to say, I still think Philly wins it though. And I still think that because as good as Ayton's been playing in the playoffs these first few games, Joel Embiid will manhandle him.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid will average 30-plus points per game for the playoffs. I want to mark that right now. There is no team that's going to have him score under 20 points in a game, except if maybe Milwaukee does it by accident once. Joel Embiid is going to go on a tear come if they get to the finals. I don't think there's a center in the NBA that can stop him. I don't think Jokic could do it. I don't think Drummond can do it. I don't think Ayton can do it. I definitely don't think Rudy Gobert could do it, seeing that I named him fourth.
Or Davis, for that matter.
Exactly. I Davis has the best chance, I would say.
Sure.
But that's also because he has LeBron James on his team.
Well, that I hope you enjoyed that. That was went a lot of back and forth with our playoff predictions. There's a lot that's up in the air. Obviously, as the field gets narrowed down, we'll have a little bit more consistency, and we'll definitely post our thoughts and kind of give you some ideas to help you win some free cash. But first of all, do yourself a favor, download Viget, use code ALLSTARS, support us because you like us, right? Hopefully. And then win yourself some cash, because honestly, like, why not? It's easy. And then you can win prizes from that along with the cash. It's a win-win for everyone, and our buddies at Viget definitely are very into it. They're doing a lot of big things coming up for football season, so we'll keep you updated on that. But I think this episode has gone long enough. Robbie, I think we did a great job. Nice comeback tour, dare I say.
Yeah, no. So for anyone who doesn't follow us on social media, we missed these last week or so. It was, Alex's birthday is May 23rd, mine's May 26th, just 3 days apart. So we wanted to take some time to be able to celebrate with our friends and family, be it where we are. But so we're back. We are going to be, we have not forgotten about the non-sports episode. That's either going to be recorded tomorrow or sometime this week. I got plenty of time off. I just took a week off of work and I'm very excited for it.
I think what's going to happen is we'll probably shoot for it to be out Wednesday.
Yeah. Perfect.
So then you can learn all about the origin story of Robbie and I. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about high school. We'll probably talk about a little bit about crushes and embarrassing things to a degree. What else? What are some other? I'm trying to think.
We'll break it up into segments. You know, we can talk about our origin story. We can talk about some of our favorite stuff. Talk about the goings on in the world broader than just sports. We're gonna keep it broad.
We'll have a nice drinking game for all of our pals to listen to and drink stuff. Perfect. So it's always some good features to the game, but. To everyone listening, hope you enjoyed. We're glad to be back, and hey, have a great rest of your week. Take care, everyone.